They're the ones that really care, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say some gems here, you know, that are going to completely transform your understanding of the world, and this will matter more than anything else you're going to learn in the class. In the concept of practice that I have been proposing, there is this very abstract template where you have means of production, you have a product, and you have an activity of transformation. So people use means of production to transform something to produce a product, right? That means of production idea is at its core a concept of power. So when you think about this in the technological case, you don't usually think of it this way, but after all, what does technological improvement mean? What does it mean to say that the force of production developed? It means our capacity to transform nature improves. We're able to produce new kinds of transformations of nature with less effort, less input, or more output than we were before. What does it mean to say that agricultural productivity has increased 1,000-fold since the Middle Ages? It means that with the same amount of human activity, human effort, we can now produce vast quantities of food. So at the present time, 3% or 2% of the American labor force is able to produce more than enough food for 100% of the population. That's incredible productivity. But you can think of it also as an enhancement of power, right? The capacity to transform nature has changed. Power in general refers to the capacities to produce the transformations specific to a given practice. Ideological power is the power to produce subjectivity. We can talk about an individual person being ideologically powerful if they have extraordinary capacities to produce transformations in people. We think of Obama, for example, as being ideologically powerful in that sense. He has a capacity to produce and transform subjectivity greater than most politicians. Power is the capacity to produce transformations, and different kinds of power are power to produce transformations specific to that kind of practice. So economic power is the power to produce economic transformations. Economic power depends upon two kinds of features of the means of production: how productive they are and how they're controlled. We talk about capitalists as being very powerful both because they control large quantities of means of production in the form of capital, and that those means of production are very productive. Both things are part of what renders their capital powerful. Powerful because of its productivity, its capacity to transform nature, and it's powerful because of its aggregation in the form of capital. Ideological power comes from your control over the means of production of ideology. The means of production of ideology includes things like the media, but it also includes things like discourse and rhetoric. That is the actual way you use media for purposes of producing subjectivity. Individuals can be ideologically powerful, but so can institutions if they control access to the means of dissemination of discourses. And the same thing is true for political power. Political power refers to the capacity to produce and transform social relations. This expression, the capacity to transform, has both an instrumental and a structural meaning. Now, this is an issue that causes endless confusion in social science discussions of power. And I mean endless. I mean, lots of the debates about power come from the problem of adequately differentiating instrumental and structural senses of what it means to have a capacity to transform. Let me first, the instrumental idea is the simplest. To say that a particular individual has a great deal of political power instrumentally means that they control a variety of resources which enables them to transform relations. these resources constitute the means of production of political practice. A political party, for example, is a means of production of political practice. Organizations are typically the most important means of production of political practice. The state is a means of production of political practice as well. Political parties, unions, are a means of production of political practice. Organizations in general, if you were to say what is the most typical type of means of production of politics, of political practice, you would say organizations. The instrumental notion is that these means of production are controlled by real people, and they deploy these means of production for their purposes. The structural notion of political power is more complicated. It refers to the senses in which people's capacity to transform political, social relations depends upon the way this a system is structured to produce unintended, that is not purposeful, effects. A group can be structurally powerful even if the individuals in the group do not consciously wield instruments of political power. This occurs when the unintended political effects, aspects, the unintended political aspects of social practices reproduce or transform relations in ways which serve the interests of the group in question. This is an issue we will talk about especially in the next two lectures, but let me just give a whiff of what the of how we'll talk how we'll think about this later. The economic practices of capitalists, have strong and systematic political effects. For example, individual capitalists simply investing and disinvesting in pursuit of profits. Why are they investing? They want to maximize their profits. Where are they investing? Because that's going to maximize their profits. They are not investing in order to affect state policies. The purpose of their investments is just to maximize their own wealth and their accumulation. That's the motivation. They're engaged in an economic practice. They're allocating resources in such a way that those resources get deployed to transform nature, to produce things which then get sold on markets, and they appropriate surplus through all of those transactions. Nevertheless, because of their structural location in the system of production, their simple act of investing and disinvesting has huge political consequences and acts as a constraint on what states do. And it acts as a constraint on what states do in ways that states want to ensure that they can invest profitably. What that means is that capitalists do not have to use their resources to instrumentally affect the state. They don't have to say, I'm going to allocate my resources to elect the politicians I like. Simply by investing and disinvesting, they're affecting what the state does. That's called the structural power of capital. So if you're a capitalist, you've got a vast fortune. There are two ways in which you can affect politics. One is consciously allocating part of your wealth for political purposes. You can buy politicians, you can bribe politicians, you can finance parties, you can do all sorts of things, create lobbyist organizations. You can also do all sorts of things with your wealth to instrumentally affect the state. But the other thing you can do with your wealth is just go about your business investing, and that will also affect the state. Now, you may also know that, so you may understand that your ordinary investments will have those consequences. Nevertheless, when you're engaged in ordinary investments, you're not thinking about, aha, I'm going to invest this way rather than that way because it will have a bigger effect on the state. If you do that, if you decide to invest in some sectors and not others in order to affect the state, then you're using your wealth instrumentally, not structurally. The structural power of capital is crucial for understanding the way capitalism works. If the only political power that was connected to the capitalist class was centered